was kind of a weird kid. I'll admit it right up front. Let's just say I was a square peg in a round hole. Let's just say that. And I guess I still am. I was awkward and I was dorky, and I guess I still am. I was too skinny, well, I'm not that anymore, and I was covered head to foot in freckles. I was a tomboy, so I played mostly with boys at school and on the block. As a result, I would get the occasional black eye and the occasional sprained ankle. This was an occurrence that irritated my mother to no end, especially the black eye part. They tended to show up on my face at about the same time as out-of-town relatives were showing up. Yes, this is my daughter, the one with the big shiner. When I was a sophomore in high school, my English teacher's name was Linda Chaika. Miss Chaika actually thought that my being a square peg in a round hole was a good thing. She thought that the tension that created enabled me to write. She began to encourage me by saying things like, "You're such a good writer. You should pursue a career as a writer." Well, I guess I kind of have in a way. Miss Chaika will never know the power her influence had on me. Her influence is why 48 years later, I have the confidence to write a children's story for Christmas. And by the way, I have written a historical story for our Good Year Friday service, and I hope you'll come. Every time I write a story, I think of Miss Chaika, and I wonder if I would have even bothered to write without her influence. I might still be playing on schoolyard lots getting black eyes, I don't know. We were created to influence and to be influenced. It's in our DNA. God has created in us the ability to influence others and to be influenced by them. We can be a positive influence or we can be a negative influence. Guess which one God wants you to be? I often take a look at the mess that our world is in and throw my hands up. How in the world can I be a positive influence in it? You might feel the same way, but let's not throw in the towel just yet. The game isn't over. If you want to be a player in the influencer game, you're going to need a sticky web. A web is a contraption built by spiders. Spiders have these things called spinnerets, and they produce spider silk, and that's the stuff that webs are made of. Insects get trapped in spider webs, providing dinner for the spider. Webs allow a spider to catch prey without having to work for it or to chase it down. So here's the spider hanging around in its web, waiting for dinner to be delivered, kind of like DoorDash. The spider's just relaxing, reading Charlotte's web, and he feels a thud, and the web lines began to vibrate. He knows it's chow time. He puts down the book and eats his dinner. The tensile strength of a spider web is greater than the same weight in steel. The sticky quality of a web makes it virtually impossible for an insect to get out of. We, like spiders, have webs. Only they aren't spider webs. They're webs of influence. We have certain people groups that we can influence. Your web largely consists of family and friends. But your web can be much larger than you realize. It can include everyone whose lives you touch in your day-to-day experience. And whether or not you realize it, whether or not you like it, you are an influencer. Jonathan was King Saul's son, and he was an influencer. We often think of Jonathan as David's sidekick, and I think he's gotten an unfair reputation for being a pansy because of his unapologetic relationship with David. He was not, as we will see in this morning's text. Reading from 1 Samuel 14, 1 through 15. One day, Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side." But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying in the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron. The people who were with him were about 600 men, including Ahijah, son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the priest of the Lord in Shiloh, wearing an ephod. And the people did not know that Jonathan had gone. Within the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistine garrison, there was a rocky crag on the one side and a rocky crag on the other side. The name of the one was Bozez and the other Seneza. The one crag rose on the north in front of Michmash and the other in the south of Gibeah. Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." And his armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is within your heart, do as you wish. Behold, I am with you, heart and soul." Then Jonathan said, "Behold, we will cross over to the men, and we will show ourselves to them. If they say to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place, and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand, and this shall be the sign to us." So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, "Look, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves." And the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us, and we will show you a thing." And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hand of Israel." Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, and his armor bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer killed them after him. And that first strike which Jonathan and his armor bearer made killed about 20 men within, as it were, a half furlong's length in an acre of land. And there was a panic in the camp, in the field, and among all the people. The garrison and even the raiders trembled, and the earth quaked, and it became a very great panic. Here we have Jonathan. He's a prince, but he's just a kid with a sword. And nobody noticed when he left camp. The only person who was with him was another kid whom nobody noticed either. It was his armor bearer, his sword caddy. The sword caddy was a younger kid who helped carry Jonathan's stuff. Nobody would have given them, the two of them, a chance in the world of pulling off what they were about to do. Jonathan gets a wild hair that he and his caddy should take on the Philistines all by themselves. The Philistines were notoriously bad guys. They hated everybody, and especially people who worshiped God. They were a barbaric seafaring people. Their hobby was picking on other countries, not just the Israelites. They sailed around the Mediterranean Sea, attacking cities everywhere they went. Jonathan was not a fool. He knew how big and fierce the Philistines were, yet he decides he's going to poke the bear. Jonathan and his caddy took down 20 men. It was 2 against 20. And here's how they did it. Jonathan knocked him down, and the sword caddy stabbed him. There became such a huge commotion, and it caused a lot of panic, and the Philistines scattered like ants. Jonathan had influence over just one person, just one, his sword caddy. And his influence over that kid won a war. An interesting verse reads, "But Jonathan did not tell his father." Jonathan did not wake up his dad, King Saul. We know Saul was in charge. Jonathan knew Saul was never going to be in favor of Jonathan's scheme. Jonathan could not have influenced his father, so he forgot about trying to influence who he couldn't. He focused on influencing the one that he could. Jonathan didn't try to influence Saul's 600-man army to help. He knew he couldn't influence them either because his dad would have never agreed, and so they would do what his dad said. The point of this is to influence who you can. There will be some who absolutely will refuse to be influenced for Christ, but pray that they can be influenced later. Sometimes we feel powerless to make a difference. Our strength of personality doesn't even measure on the Richter scale. So we do nothing. What we don't see is right in front of our faces. God is there. He has all the strength that we need, and he has all the personality that we'll ever need. Jonathan said to his sword caddy, "Come with me." He didn't say, "I'm the crown prince, so you have to do what I say." He didn't use the power of authority. He didn't flash a toothy smile. He just used his influence. Take a look around you. Who has God placed in your web of influence? I wager you have no idea the difference you can make in someone's life. Jonathan had one scrawny caddy. He had one sword, but he had one God. And all of these things added up to a victory over an army of thousands. All of these added up to freedom from oppression for his nation for a bit of time. Just a little bit of influence. Relationship is the key to influence. Without relationship, you can't influence people. Matthew 15:13 says, "You are the salt of the earth." Salt influences everything it touches. God says, "That's you. You're the salt. Sprinkle out your influence. Don't dump it out. Too much salt is overwhelming." Do you suppose Jonathan's sword caddy would have been willing to risk his life if Jonathan had pulled out the "I'm in charge" card? I don't think so. I think he agreed to go with Jonathan because Jonathan had an influence over him. This is the essence of influence. We win the hearts and souls of others through the strength of our relationship with them. Influence is born out of trust. If you grow your relationship will also grow. When we study how Jesus used influence, we see that he didn't pull the God card. He rarely used his position or power. He didn't say, "Yo, dudes, do what I say, I'm Jesus." He spent most of his time building relationships. He invested heavily into 12 people every single day of his earthly life. Jesus influenced a ragtag group of fishermen, and they were transformed. These guys changed so much that every one of them was loyal to Jesus to the death, literally. And here we sit today in this church, all because one man influenced a few fishermen, and they influenced people in turn. They changed history. Dr. John Getty went to Annatom in 1848. He was a missionary there for 24 years. After he died, they erected a stone tablet in his memory. And on this tablet were inscribed the words, "When he landed in 1848, there were no Christians. When he left in 1872, there were no heathens." One man, he influenced an entire island. In his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie gives a fundamental goal in influencing people, and that is to arouse in people an eager desire. In order to influence someone else, to have them want what we have to arouse a desire in them. And what is the desire that we want to arouse in them? Jesus, flat out. That's what we want, to influence others to desire a relationship with Jesus Christ. Influencers employ a few ways to impact others. Two are really simple: smile and listen. After that, be vulnerable and share personal stories about how God has entered and impacted your life. If you want to influence others, you have to be authentic. In other words, don't be a hypocrite. You have to be warm. You can't be a cold fish. Example is another way of influencing others. Let's say you have a kid who won't read, but you want him to read instead of playing video games. Well, here's what doesn't work: nagging. Another thing that doesn't work is putting up a magnet on your refrigerator that says, "Have you read today?" Here's what does work: seeing their parents read. Setting an example is a powerful influencer. We've probably all had the flu more times than we can count. It's highly contagious. It's airborne, and it passes through human contact. There's a correlation between influenza and influence. The word flu, F-L-U, is right there in the middle of both words. The words influence and influenza come from the same Latin root. Influenza in the Latin actually means influence. When we have influenza, a submicroscopic virus influences our healthy cells. Every one of us are carriers of the flu, not the virus kind, but the influence kind. You and I are influencers. Good or bad, we influence others. Every person we breathe on or touch, we give them the flu, the influence. Easter is almost upon us. Did you know people are more open to attending church on Easter Sunday than any other Sunday on the calendar? Churches report their highest attendance is on Easter Sunday. 90 to 95% of all commitments to Christ come after a person has accepted an invitation to attend church. Imagine if the person you asked to come with you became one of those 90 to 95%. We have a yearly opportunity coming up to ask people to come with us to church. We know there are so many people who need Christ. We also know from the scriptures that Jesus was concerned for the lost, every single one of them, as we read in Matthew 18, 12 through 14. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than the 99 that never went astray. So it is not the will of my Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. Mike and I are going to sing a song called 99. Lamb. Your influence matters more than you know. The first step in influencing them is to pray. And this morning, I'm going to call us to a time of prayer. And you can pray where you are, you can come to the altar, but I'm calling us to a time of prayer for the lost lambs that we know in our lives. And I'm asking us to spend a little bit of time this morning praying for them and asking Jesus to find them. Are you willing to pray for them? Do you love them enough?